And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to a Monday edition as we start a brand new week, the week between Christmas and New Year's, here on My Car Guru.
You know, hasn't buying lighting for your home become a different kind of a challenge than it used to be? Remember when you go buy a 60-watt light bulb, and you know what a 60-watt light bulb would do? And now you have to do equivalents and lumens and all of these little different measurements. I bought some bulbs the other day for our bathroom. Have these fixtures so that I can see my ruggedly handsome face. I'm kidding. And I just want to make sure I got all the hairs pulled out of my ears. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the end of my nose.
I know.
Yeah. So anyway, so I bought this light that I thought was correct. It was supposed to be an equivalent to a 60-watt light. When I put it up there, I can see way too much of myself now. There's three bulbs, and the one that I replaced is way brighter. So now, you know what I got to do, right?
Probably make the other two equivalent to that.
Yeah, I've got to go spend more money now.
Yeah,
and buy more LED lights. What is a lumen anyway? Do you know what a lumen is?
I really don't. I don't know exactly what a lumen is.
Well, I'm not going to get into the technical explanation because it just went like right over my head.
Well, I guess it's short for luminescent, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it could be.
Yeah.
But it's basically the light output of a bulb or a lamp. Okay? So think of as a fancy way of saying just how bright it's going to be. Does that make sense? Okay. So it's a measured brightness and the amount of light emitted from a bulb or a light source. Now, have you ever been driving down the road and you get really upset at night because you think somebody still has their bright lights on?
Yes.
It's very possible that they don't.
That's right.
And if you know, flash your lights on them or turn yours on just to get them back,
which a lot of people do,
right? Then you're getting ready to be fried, you know, because they are going to go. They probably, if they're that bright, wait till they turn on their bright lights.
It'd be like spotlight mode, the Batman spotlight or something.
There you go. So basically, there are three different types of headlights. Used to there were many, just two. Halogen used to be the upgrade. You know, 25 years ago, halogen bulb was the brightest you could get for a car. Now they're the lowest level. A stock halogen bulb will emit around 700 lumens.
All right, as we talk about lumens and halogens and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, we are cutting in live. That was a previously recorded version, and now joining us live is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, on this Monday morning.
Yes, we had a little time snafu this morning.
Okay.
I was sitting here in my office and got distracted, and this was a call-in day. And sometimes, I think this is a first in 20-plus years, Timmy.
So we decided to do like on a dance floor and cut in here.
Yeah, I get criticized pretty heavy when I run a rerun show. You know, people are, you know, some actually must apparently pay attention to the show, which amazes me, you know, why somebody would want to pay attention. I figure I was just a time filler, you know, between you and Mike Gallagher. Or is Gallagher still on, or did you kick him off?
Chris Plant is on now.
Chris Plant, okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I am here and live, and, you know, I did want to talk today about a couple of things. One of the big things going on in the news today that's affecting the auto industry in a big way is this gigantic chip shortage. Now, you know what chips are. Basically, they're little bits of computers, and that they actually serve a function, you know, in a car to complete tasks. And you know, the electronics. You go back 25 years ago, the electronics in a car represented about 19% of the cost of the car. What do you think it is today, Tim?
Electronics years ago, 19%. How many years ago did you say?
25 years ago.
25 years ago. Now I would say the electronics are, just taking a shot, somewhere around 60%.
Well, not quite.
Not quite.
40%.
40%.
Yeah,
okay.
40%.
Okay.
And chips have become pretty much like a commodity. When you think of the things that go into a car, you would think, from a commodity standpoint, steel, right? You know, and aluminum and things like that, plastic. And now chips have become a commodity, and there is a major chip shortage. There's no problem with the capacity in this world to build chips. The problem is COVID. And the ripple effect that happens, it's just like a traffic jam on I-26 that we talk about. You know, when one car stops, it backs up everything. And that's what has happened with the chips. Subaru last week said that it was cutting production at its only two auto plants in Japan and in Indiana. Ford Motor Company just shut down an entire assembly plant in Louisville, Kentucky because of this. Toyota has reduced output. You know what output is?
Different from input?
They reduced output of their Tundra pickups. Nissan has also slowed assembly of theirs. So this is going to bother us for a while, as if we didn't need something else, you know, to get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had several cases of COVID in our dealership. I think we're up to a total out of 60, approximately 60 employees. I think we've had eight people that have tested positive. Most of those have been young. I'm, knock on wood, I've been fortunate to not get it. My nephew had it. I've been sitting in meetings with people that had it. You know, maybe I'm just being just careful enough or lucky enough. I asked my wife last night. We went up to Johnson City and went to Mahoney's and went out to eat at Southern Craft. This was yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked her, do you think it's just luck or is it just being careful? And she said, I think it's a little bit of both, apparently. I mean, you know, you think about, I think about some of the people that have gotten it and passed away. And I know they were careful. I mean, I saw them out, you know, with masks on and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of how hard you try, you know, all these assembly plants and stuff are monitoring people as they come into the plant, taking their temperatures, regular testing for key employees. But we're still going to have this stuff going on for a while, and until everybody gets a vaccination, or most people do. What have you heard about the vaccine available for young folks like us, Timmy?
Well, I've heard it's going to be a while, unless you're working in, you know, healthcare or teaching or something like that. If you're our age, it's going to be a little while yet.
Yeah. Of course, we're no spring chickens.
No.
I'm older than you are. But, you know, this is something that's going to continue to disrupt it. But so, you know, the caution is that everybody needs to continue to keep their hands clean and, you know, wear the masks and do what we can to stay away. But, you know, just looking at the general public and businesses that I encounter on a frequent basis, I did a carry out at Aubrey's the other night. And I was talking to the manager. When I walked in, I saw I was just amazed. I hadn't seen that many people out to eat. Every table was full. When you walk into Aubrey's, you got the bar there to the left. It was full.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, of course, people don't have masks on because they're eating. I find it very difficult and inconvenient to try to eat with a mask on.
It's tough. You got to kind of slip it up and over the mask and all that. It just doesn't work very well.
No. No. So, yeah, you see that and you just cringe. But it is people are tired of it, and they're wanting to get back on with their lives. Of course, maybe all those people have already had the vaccination, and they're not afraid of it anymore. Who knows?
Yeah, or maybe they've already had it, and they think they're immune to it, which, you know, they say there's a pretty good chance of that, but it's still not 100% that you're immune.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's take our first break. We'll be back here in a minute and talk a little bit more about some of the concerns that I have about advertising and deceptive advertising and some tips that you need to pay attention to if you are in the market for a new car right now.
Back here, it is Monday morning, Martin Luther King Jr. Day on My Car Guru with Lenny Lawson.
You know, I was listening to the first part of my rerun show that you had started, and I was talking about headlights, and that show was prompted by a car that I have out here in the driveway right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 2013 BMW that had the headlights were, the lenses somehow got cracked and allowed moisture to get into the headlight. And it just goes to show you how an electrical malfunction can trigger all kinds of failures. This vehicle is so screwed up right now. Now, I don't own this vehicle. We had a customer that was interested in trading it, and or having us buy it. And of course, we knew it had the headlight problem. And I think I mentioned that it could cost as much as $7,000 to replace the headlights in this car.
Mm.
But yesterday, I took my one of my cars I was driving. I had to take it over to my second shop over there where we do all the restorations and stuff. And that car was sitting there, and I said, "I'm gonna drive that thing and just see how it drives. Maybe we can get the headlights fixed and might be a good car for us to buy and then turn around and sell." But I was concerned on the way back to my house if I was going to make it. I mean, it had warning lights going off.
Hmm.
It had, like, the dashboard is pretty complicated. It's a BMW 528i. I think it's an X-Drive, which means that it would be a four-wheel drive passenger car. And, Jimmy, it was crazy. And then when I went out, and it started fine at the dealership, when I went out the next morning to start it up, it wouldn't start. So all these electronic malfunctions had basically drained the battery. They pretty much stayed. Even though I had the key out of it, it continued to have a draw on the battery. So, you know, you just, it makes you think about, especially German cars, high-end Japanese cars, things like that, is, you know, maybe leasing is the best alternative. You know, do something that matches the warranty. Make sure that you do buy an extended warranty on these higher-end cars if you decide to buy one, and consider trading them before the warranty runs out. Because, I mean, come on, $7,000 for headlights? Now, you know, this particular car may have been involved in a fender bender, which caused those headlight lenses to crack. But still, you know, that should have been taken care of by the insurance company. You know, I mentioned that to the guy who owned the car. I said, "Did you have a problem with the front end?" He said, "Yeah, we did. We had to have the bumper painted." I said, "Well, and the insurance paid for that?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Well, you need to turn in a request about these headlights, you know, to maybe get a supplement, and maybe the insurance company will pay for that." You know, anytime you have an issue with an insurance company or a wreck, or you feel like they're not paying you enough for your car, it doesn't hurt to call a car dealer, even me, and maybe get some advice as to values and what you should do, you know, in case you do have a situation like that. So my cell phone number, like I say, is 552. It's area code 423-552-2020. Best thing to do is just text me and give me a heads up, or if you don't use texting, then call. Leave a message. If I'm not available, I will call you back.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the advertising thing, we talked last week about internet advertising and how it's just it. You wish that it could be straightforward. I do also, and you would wish that dealers would stick by the rules. So many of them, though, since these rules haven't really been enforced that much over the last 10 years or so, there's just nothing to keep dealers from misbehaving. And one of the ones that I hear a lot are guaranteed trade allowances, Tim. Now, you know, if I've never seen your car, and I don't even know who you are, and I offer you, let's say, $8,000 minimum for your trade-in, you know, what if you have a car, and there are cars out there that are worth $500, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally falling apart. What if you have a $500 car? I've offered you $7,500 more for your car than it's worth. Now, the average selling price of a new car today is about $38,000. The average markup is going to be on the car like that, it's probably going to be about $2,500, somewhere in that neighborhood, okay, including holdback and everything.
Mm-hmm.
How can I give you $7,500 more for your car than it's worth when I only have $2,500 of margin to work with?
Well,
does that sound possible?
It doesn't sound possible realistically. I guess you the margin you're talking about, you go up on that.
Well, the only thing you could do, Tim, would be to mark up your car.
That's right.
Over the MSRP. Now, Tennessee law says that when you price a car and you offer a discount, your discount has to be based on, and I'm talking about new cars. You can do whatever you want to on used cars, but on new cars, your discount has to be based on MSRP. So if I've only got $2,500 worth of markup and I'm offering you $7,500 for your trade over what it's worth, then I'm going to have to finagle and deceive in order to be able to give you what I've said. Now, you know, you may have a situation where the dealer says, well, it was subject to an appraisal. It was subject to, you know, the condition of your vehicle, the miles on your vehicle, and they start whacking away. But the problem with most of the ads that I'm seeing is they are not disclaiming anything in any kind of clear and conspicuous way.
Right.
You know, when you read the rules for the Motor Vehicle Commission in the state of Tennessee, these are advertising guidelines for dealers. When I wanted to become a dealer, I had to fill out an application with the Tennessee Motor Vehicle Commission. They determined whether I had the credentials and the financial ability, the reputation, whatever, in order to become a dealer. They also are the ones who write the rules. On the commission are fellow dealers and bureaucrats. There is a group of part of the Commerce and Insurance Department in the state of Tennessee. They set these rules many years ago, and they really enhanced the rules about 25 years ago and started a strong enforcement policy. Well, the enforcement has kind of gone the way of a lot of government programs and gotten very lax. And so the only way that you can get any kind of action is to file a complaint. Now, dealers can file complaints. Consumers can file complaints. You know, but if it has to do with a deception in advertising or something like that, your best bet is to go with the Motor Vehicle Commission. You can complain to the Better Business Bureau. You can complain, maybe get a lawyer and try to sue them for fraud or something like that. You can imagine how expensive that is to do. But before you take any kind of action on something like this, you need to consult with me or somebody like me. Maybe you have a dealer friend or, you know, a lawyer in your family or whatever that can coach you through this. There's so many different types of situations. You know, advertising deception is one. Just straight up fraud, you know, is another, something that occurs on the lot where you are deceived, you know, into doing something, you are lied to at the dealership. Just make sure you get stuff in writing and read the contract. Really, Tim, that's the best defense that you have, is reading everything and getting everything in writing. And, of course, I always recommend that folks that they go home and think about it. Don't let the pressure, a real aggressive salesperson, convince you to do it today, to do it right now. That's where people end up paying too much. And then they go home, and it's too late. You know, they've signed the contract. There is no right of rescission when you buy a car. You can't go in the next day or 3 days later. You know, a lot of people think it's kind of like signing a mortgage on a house where you have a three-day right of rescission. You do not have that when you buy a car. If you go in and buy it and then on Saturday go in Monday and say, hey, I've changed my mind, they do not have to let you out of the deal.
That's right.
Now, if you haven't signed a contract, or if they try to get you to sign a different contract because they couldn't get your financing approved, and they want you to sign something else, you don't have to sign that second contract. And they can try to hold your feet to the fire if they want to. I never do that. I'd let somebody out. Sometimes my salesperson may not like it, but you know, if somebody has a really good reason that they want to get out of the deal, then I'm going to let them out of the deal. I don't want an unhappy customer out there, but you know, a lot of dealerships don't care. And they're going to hold your feet to the fire, and they can legally. So watch out for that. Read the advertising. Read the paperwork. Go home and think about it, and then you will probably not make one of these major financial blunders buying a car.
Yep. Read that fine print. What is it you say about the fine print?
Yeah, what the large print giveth, the fine print taketh away. I think it's in Proverbs.
There you go. Anyway, good stuff.
Or it should be.
It should be, anyway. We'll take our last break and come back and wrap things up. Back here for the remaining moments of My Car Guru this Monday morning.
We've had self-parking cars for probably 7 years now. But yesterday was the first time I had personally ever used it. And driving my wife's Continental, Lincoln Continental, I dropped her off so she could run into Southern Craft, and I saw a parking place there on the right. So I went down this little street, and I pushed the self-parking button. And I hadn't used it, so you just look at the screen, and I followed the instructions, and, you know, that thing's got some pretty expensive wheels on it, and they stick out a little bit further than the tires do. Very easy to scrub these expensive wheels. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people listening have probably done that. But, Tim, it told me to pull up past the parking place. It said stop. It said put the vehicle in reverse. Take your hands off the steering wheel. I did that, and I started going in reverse, and immediately that wheel starts turning itself and turns right in to that parking place and just put it dead center, about 12 inches from the curb and perfectly centered in that parking place.
Hmm.
I put it in park, got out, and just stood back and looked at it in awe. I mean, that was really neat. And that's what we have in store for us when it comes to self-driving cars and all of this technology. As long as they can make enough microchips, we'll probably get there eventually, Tim.
All right. Park it. Self-parking itself. Something else.
That's right.
That'll do it for My Car Guru on this Monday morning. And, Lenny, we'll talk to you tomorrow.